You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Take a moment and think of what you feel when you hear the word conflict. Does your heart beat a little faster? Do you get a queasy feeling in the pit of your stomach? Are you like our producer Hans Andersen and start thinking of a way to shift the conversation to a less controversial terrain? Maybe the weather or how your commute was? We here at Soundside are all about helping people grow or forcing them. You know, whatever. So when we heard that the Washington Mediation Association is celebrating its 40th anniversary, we thought, what a perfect opportunity for Hans to get up close and personal with conflict. Here he is with his experience.
It seems strange to me that there are people who are willingly putting themselves amid conflict every day, instead of making jokes or, you know, sarcastic comments about vulnerable or uncomfortable topics. They communicate really directly about it. It's really weird. They don't spend sleepless nights wondering if they offended the person who works at the front desk of the gym and instead accept that tension sometimes happens. They only agree with statements when they actually, you know, do agree with that statement. In short, they are willingly themselves and are unafraid of everyday tension, or at least okay with it. Mediators can't avoid conflict. They work in it. They handle divorce proceedings, custody disputes, property damages, and other potentially very messy civil disputes. And how the standards for how mediators operate in the state is set by the Washington Mediation Association. And I wanted to get a little bit more info about where mediation came from and how people who engage with disagreement and discord view conflict in their lives. So I spoke with Leslie Ann Groves. She's the executive director of the Northwest Mediation Center in Spokane and a board member at the Washington Mediation Association. I asked her the basics about mediation, like how the process usually goes, what it feels like to mediate, and what actually is mediation in the first place.
There are some formal ways to describe it and some informal ways to describe it. So the formal way to describe it is that mediation is a process in which an impartial and neutral third party, agreeable to all the parties, assists the disputants in coming to a resolution that is acceptable to all of them. And the mediator in this case has absolutely no authoritative decision-making power at all. So informally, you sit down with a mediator and the other person with whom you have a dispute, and that mediator just acts as a facilitator. And party self-determination, that is, the ability of the parties to make their own decisions. No judge is going to do it for them. No authority from any outside entity is going to do it for them. They get to do it themselves. So it's both about freedom and about party responsibility.
Can you set a scene for what a mediation looks like? Let's say it's a divorce proceeding and there's kids involved. How would that play out?
Yeah. Okay. So one party calls and they say, I'd like to sit down with the other party, but I'm not sure that they're willing and I don't know how to talk to them about it. But I sure would like to do that. So we say, we'd be happy to talk with you. We will find out a little bit more about the situation and then we'll contact the other party and we'll let you know whether they're willing or not. Mediator makes contact with the second party and says, we got a call from first party and they would like to mediate. Would you be willing? And we talk about what the process is and what the cost is and how much time it's going to take and how we're going to try to make it a psychologically safe place to discuss these things and the fact that it is very, very confidential, of course. And hopefully and usually the second party says, I'll give it a try. I don't think it's going to work, but I'll give it a try. So then we schedule a mediation and seat them at a round table, sit down with them and say, here's what the process is going to look like. Please tell us why you're here. And so first party will tell why they're there and then the second party tells why they're there. And then we begin to discuss what they'd like to talk about. And sometimes they get agitated. Sometimes they get angry. That's okay. Mediators are trained to be okay with the rising emotions that happen when you are talking about a dispute. After all, it is really all about feelings. And the unmet needs of people bring up some very, very strong feelings. So what we try to do is determine what their needs are and where there might be common ground. We help the parties through a conversation, and it can last for an hour or two or three. We try not to go too long because parties get tired. And when they get tired, sometimes they will make decisions that are not the best for them. I have even had divorce mediations come back for as many as six or seven sessions, 1 or 2 hours each. And each time the parties go home with some homework to do. Find out more information so that when you come, you are making an informed decision. You might have to talk with an accountant. You might have to talk with a lawyer. So these divorcing parties you were talking about, maybe they did have to talk with their lawyers, and I would encourage them to do that. And then if they needed to talk with their accountants, I would encourage them to do that. Let's say that one of their children has a medical issue, and they should both be talking to the medical professionals about how they can co-parent in a way that is going to be the best for the children. When we're done, then we write it down. We write it down so that everybody knows exactly what they promised, and each party gets a copy of that signed document to take with them. If they need it for litigation, if they need it because they're in the middle of a divorce filing in court, for example, then they have that document to take to court. And that once they've signed it and agreed to it, then it becomes available as evidence in court. Otherwise, everything that went on in that session, including the notes that I took, is confidential. I will shred those notes at the end of the mediation when we're finished and we've either come to an agreement or sometimes, unfortunately, not come to an agreement, but I will shred my notes. And one more thing about that unfortunately thing I said. When parties don't agree in a mediation, sometimes the process they have gone through has been so effective for them that either they will make the decision to get together without a mediator, or they will come back to mediation. So we don't count success as the agreements that are reached. We count successes as the ability of the process to help the parties come closer and closer to dispute resolution.
You're sitting in between two people who are having a conflict. They're having a disagreement. Has your role as a mediator taught you anything about conflict in your personal life?
Oh, yes. And I remember before I started mediating and learning about conflict, it was really easy for me to get very angry, to lash out. And I learned in mediation that conflict actually is often productive if it is solved in a way that doesn't end up in some sort of violence. So along the way, I learned a lot about what's called nonviolent communication, promulgated by a fellow named Marshall Rosenberg. And it's just a very easy way to take a look at a conflict and say, what happened? Oh, not what I think about it, but just what happened? Not how it affected me right then, but what happened. And then once I can actually say what happened, then I say, well, how did that affect me? What need of mine was unmet by that thing that happened? And then I can say, oh, and then I got angry, or oh, then I got so sad, or oh, then I was humiliated. I can begin to identify the feelings that came up, and then I also identify why they came up. And once I can identify that, then I can say, oh, okay, here's what I really need, not necessarily what I want, not my position, not the way I come barreling into the argument, but what do I need from the other party? So I guess what I have learned is that conflict engagement is the most important thing. So as mediators, we help people to engage in the conflict in a way that is productive and try to steer them away from engaging in it in a way that is destructive. Yeah, it has changed me because I really look at conflict as being possibly a very productive thing, even though sometimes it's really hard to be in the middle of it.
But I think that's also hard to grasp if you're someone who might be conflict avoidant or you shy away from conflict because it's scary from you.
Oh, sure. And personally, I'm quite avoidant. I really don't want to engage in conflict. But part of that is that I'm also very collaborative. And so when things come up that make me want to run, I will just stop and think and let the prefrontal cortex go into effect rather than the amygdala, right? And then I will say, oh, there's a way to fix this if I just address it and address it in a way that is collaborative. Parties can learn to do that. We all start off emotional, and more we think about it. And if we can stop, think, and say, ah, there's no real danger here if I address this in a way that will help me communicate with the other party or parties involved.
That was Soundside producer Hans Andersen getting a lesson in conflict and mediation from Leslie Ann Groves, the executive director of the Northwest Mediation Center in Spokane. Now, there are many out there who'd still rather have their day in court than go through mediation. That's perhaps not too surprising, considering how we've been trained to think. You've just been requested to sit in a mediation doesn't have the same ring as, I am suing you for everything you have. Christine Cimini is a professor at the University of Washington's Law School, who oversees the mediation clinic and serves as the associate dean for experiential education. She says that mediation is the opposite of what people in law school often learn.
Everything they've learned in law school is about two parties, this side versus that side, and we're going to stand in our positions and we're going to fight for an absolute truth, whatever that truth may be, as if there's one factual truth. Right. And that's going to bring resolution, which, in some instances it does, or in some instances you need it to. But students come into the clinic and we do a lot of the underlying pieces of, you have to learn how to do reflective listening. You have to learn how to think about taking people off of fixed positions and thinking about the expansive ways to resolve problems. And students will say to me, oh my God, this was really helpful in my relationship with my parents or my partner. Like, all of a sudden now I'm such a better communicator. And this is so helpful. So I do think it's an interesting contrast in law.
Cimini was a court litigator for 23 years before focusing on mediation. She's done that for the last 7 years. And she says it took her a long time to get out of the advocate role. It was hard not to offer up solutions and to remain neutral in a mediation. Her students feel similarly.
I think one of the things students find hardest in the beginning is, one, not problem solving. They all think, okay, I've heard your side. I know the answer. Like, I'm going to solve it for you. And that is never going to reach the best resolution. And then not to take sides, to not think, oh, you're right. Right? You have to suspend all that judgment and put it over here and leave it at the door and say, doesn't matter who's right or wrong. I'm just going to bring you two together and try to help you find the best way forward for you two at this moment.
Cimini says that mediation is a part of a spectrum of alternative dispute resolution frameworks. And she says all of these alternatives are used more than you think.
Because dispute resolution tools are being used with such frequency that they're not as alternative as they once were. These are all kind of different versions of ways to resolve disputes before getting to court. And they each have, they each have strengths and benefits and times when one might be more appropriate than the other.
To get an idea of how effective mediation is, we asked Cimini about data or studies on mediation, and there wasn't much. She's currently working on a pilot program funded through a grant by the Seattle Housing Authority. The program is providing alternative dispute resolution interventions, like mediation, to resolve conflict that may lead to evictions.
So someday, hopefully we'll be able to say, at least in this universe, here's what did and didn't work, and here's the percentage of times it worked, and here's some of the challenges or whatever. But right now, I don't think there's a lot, if any, data on that out there.
But until that day, she pointed us to some other evidence in support of mediation.
The other thing that's very borne out in the data is that when parties agree upon a resolution in a mediation, the likelihood of compliance is much greater, in part because they came up with it. They decided on some level that this was a good resolution. And so compliance without being dictated to is a lot greater than if a judge says you must do X, Y, or Z. Parties don't necessarily have to buy into that. The judge can order it, but it's more likely that parties will comply with the resolution when they've been party to the actual substance of the resolution.
Cimini says mediation works well for people who are entering into negotiations in good faith. She says it's great for people with ongoing relationships because it can salvage that relationship while also allowing for restitution of some harm. Courts have limited tools, often just a judgment and transfer of money. Of course, there are also a number of reasons why someone would not want to seek mediation.
The first one that I think probably everybody will raise is if the parties are involved in a domestic violence situation, sexual or physical abuse, or even ongoing egregious harassment between the parties, it's probably not a good idea to mediate, because the premise of mediation is that parties come to the table with their ability to articulate their positions and feel able to agree or disagree. If there's unequal or uneven power dynamics going on, and one party doesn't believe they have the ability or doesn't feel the ability to articulate or stand up for their own opinions, then the other party can exploit that, and it's really not conducive to mediation. So that's one instance where I think it's a very, line that you want to be talking to your client about before even thinking about mediation.
And another reason you might seek a court date instead of mediation is if you want to deter some activity by having a public ruling on your case, or if you want to set some sort of court precedent. After all, mediations are confidential, and no one ever mediates up to the Supreme Court. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.